This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The word dastardly is indeed a dastardly word. In fact, it is a word that engenders such internal feelings and emotions and so on, as rightly it should, that it should produce a change in thinking and behavior. Dastardly. D-A-S-T-A-R-D-L-Y. Here's what it means. It's an adjective, which means it describes an attitude or behavior or action or a plan or a purpose or an agenda, so on. It means wicked, cruel, evil, heinous, diabolical, dark, vile, monstrous, abominable, despicable, degenerate. As if that were not enough, very cruel, using tricks to hurt people, cowardly and malicious. That's dastardly for you. And anyone who engages in behavior, attitudes, thinking, agendas that can be described that way, well, I would think we would want to run from them, wouldn't you? But the amazing thing is that we don't. And that's what we want to look at here today on Viewpoint. What is it in our country that is so dastardly, that is so characteristic of division in our country, that is so unmitigatedly heinous, that it should go to the very core of our attitudes and our feelings to utterly and totally repudiate the roots of it and to embrace its contrary? Well, you better anchor your seatbelt today, friends. I do mean that. And you better apply a shoulder harness and maybe something to brace your head, because there are some of you whose heads are going to be shaken almost out of their place today as we talk about religion and racism and national division. But that's not going to be the title of the program. The title of the program today is Dastardly Deception, the Malignant Manipulation of American Blacks. Let me repeat that in case you didn't catch it. Dastardly Deception, the Malignant Manipulation of American Blacks. Do I have your attention? I hope so. So please, attempt to listen to today's program with an open heart and an open mind, because this has nothing to do with some political agenda, even though there will be political names that will be used in the context of the program necessarily in order to identify where the dastardly deeds are coming from and have been coming from the longest existing political party in the world. That's right, from the longest existing political party in the world. Now, before we get into that aspect of it, let me just indicate to you that an article came out from a very prominent political commentator, and it was not about this issue at all. But this political commentator said, the United States is now suffering a major divide that may be insurmountable. A major divide that may be insurmountable. Now, this political commentator was not talking specifically about the issues we're going to talk about today. But I saw that and I said, that's absolutely true. We are divided in a manner that may be insurmountable. That is, unless you and I and we the people, pastor and people alike, of whatever color our skin, are to recognize what has happened to us, the dastardly nature of what has happened to us, and to embrace solutions. Now, in this introductory segment of the program today, we're focusing on religion, racism, and national division. Remember, this political commentator said that there's such division in the country that it may be insurmountable. That division basically can be summarized in two words, religion and racism. Religion and racism. There is the religious or basically religious-oriented people, meaning Christian-oriented people, and then there are the basically anti-Christian-oriented people. And now, in America, those groups are nearly equally divided. Another way of describing them would be a God-fearing group and a non-God-fearing group. You know, it used to be in our country that any citizen who was respectable, could be believed, was honorable, kept their word, was described as a God-fearing person. It's been at least 30 or 40 years since I've heard anyone use that term in our country. I've asked pastor and people alike, have you heard anyone use that phrase or that term lately? No. Why is that? Because the very concept of God-fearing has virtually been erased from our memory. That being the case, those who have most erased that concept from their memory have become one half of the nation that votes for a particular political party. The others who still supposedly, as one former president says, cling to their guns and their religion, that group forms the other half of the nation that tends to embrace the other political party, major political party. So the nation is profoundly divided, but not just politically. The political divide is based upon a religious divide. And we need to understand that. Otherwise, we cannot comprehend the motivations that are going on that form the decisions, the direction, the statements, the positions, the agendas of the respective political parties. They're not formed in the abstract. They're not formed just because of politics. They're formed because of religious viewpoints. One is very anti-God, not God-fearing for the most part. The other is much more God-fearing at various levels, by far not perfect, and some not God-fearing at all, but by comparison, preserving the God-fearing nature. So, that having been said, then we have the other aspect of the Great Divide, and that is racial ideas. For want of another term, we'll just call it racism. Now, racism doesn't just have to do with black and white issues, although in our thinking today, that's how it has tended to be used. And there's no question that there has been racism, historically and even currently. But you might be shocked to know what that racism really looks like. My friend, it's dastardly. It's beyond anything that you want to believe. That it is true, and I hope you'll stay tuned. You're listening to Viewpoint, and Viewpoint is determining destiny.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
In my book, Renewing the Soul of America, is a chapter called A Civil Body Politic. A Civil Body Politic. And in that chapter, I talk about the divisions in our country and how they have come about and the impact of those and the choices that we face. And indeed, One of those has to do with religion. The other has to do with racism. In fact, in the book, I use the title Labels and Libels. Labels are libels. And it seems that we've become unable or unwilling to speak with clear and convincing speech. And so political correctness has gained a stronghold or even a stranglehold in our ability to communicate in good faith. And so what we do, we tend to use labels a lot. They're shorthand ways of trying to describe a certain thing without saying much about it. And labels are not good. They preempt discussion. And therefore, I have said, labels often become libels. In other words, they say things about someone else that aren't necessarily true. And we should avoid that like the plague. Then I have a segment in that chapter of Civil Body Politic called A Blow to the Left, A Blow to the Right. A blow to the liberal, a blow to the so-called conservative. Then comes the segment Racism, Rhetoric, and Reconciliation. And I do make the statement, racism is a reality. It has no place in our civil body politic. It's repugnant to the covenant with God and our fellow man. And so we must, with God's help, eradicate this blight from our hearts and society. But fundamentally, racism is not a problem that can be remedied by legislation or litigation. It can only be accomplished by heart surgery, because the problems that drive it are issues of the heart. So where does that leave us? Well, Black America has long been the preeminent minority, a unique place in our history. But the problem is that being the case, the Black community has not been just suppressed or enslaved, but diabolically and dastardly abused, manipulated, and malignantly controlled. And we're not willing to own up to it and admit it. And so we're going to talk about that very pointedly here on Viewpoint today. In fact, I'll share with you toward the end of the broadcast, if we have time, the words that came from Harriet Beecher Stowe in Uncle Tom's Cabin that are contained in my book, Renewing the Soul of America, One Person at a Time, Beginning with You. Here is an $18 book endorsed by 38 national Christian leaders, many of whom were at disagreement with one another on so many issues. Yet they, 38 national leaders endorsed this book, Renewing the Soul of America. Why? Because they saw something in this book that was radically different than any other book written concerning our country and its challenges in our generation. They saw it as having real answers from God's viewpoint, real answers, not just political talk, not just accusations and finger pointing. And the book is yours today. An $18 book, yours for $15 on the program. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. Now remember, that's only one chapter. Oh, let me tell you, my friends, there are 600 quotations from our nation's history. It's so enlightening, informing, but even transforming. One of the things that gripped me the most when people first got a hold of this book was their reports that in reading chapter one, they broke down, fell on their faces in tears. Just reading chapter one. Renewing the Soul of America. It's on our website, saveus.org. I urge you to get a copy of it. Now, we get back to the dastardly deception. We've talked about religion and racism as being at the heart of our national division. The question is, how do we identify, though, what is causing that? What is at the root of it, and why is it that we can't seem to get a hold of it? How is it that this has become so deceptive that I have chosen to describe it as a dastardly deception? Well, let's begin by taking a look at what's been happening over the past year or so across our country with the seeming faddish willingness and desire to remove and take down the various monuments and memorials in our country that deal with the issue of slavery, that deal with the issue of the Civil War, and so on. Why is it that all of a sudden they want to take down all these monuments here in Richmond, Virginia, which was the capital of the Confederacy? We have a street that's internationally known as Monument Avenue. It has many, many amazing monuments. When I drive down that street and I see those monuments, I don't think, wow, how happy I am that these people fought for slavery. No, that thought never enters my mind. So what is the thinking that I have? This is part of our history, and it's worthy to be memorialized. We don't want to forget it, because those who don't remember their history are doomed to repeat it. In fact, my friend, those that are crying the loudest to remove the monuments and take down all the memorials are the ones that are most at the very heart of the dastardly deception that is taking place to ensure and secure for all time the division in our country, particularly racially. Are you listening? Erasing history to hide its horror. Who are the ones that want to take down the monuments? Friends, they're the ones that are directly associated with the most heinous events that perpetuated slavery in this country. I hope you're listening. It's time to tell the truth. The whole truth. Nothing but the truth, don't you think? After the Civil War, Democrats implemented new strategies to re-enslave or re-oppress African Americans. They introduced things like Jim Crow laws. For instance, President Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat, segregated the army and federal government. They were integrated by Republicans before him, and again by Republicans after Roosevelt. President Roosevelt appointed a leader that is... President Roosevelt appointed a leader of the Ku Klux Klan to the Supreme Court, and another KKK leader, Robert Byrd, was a prominent Democratic senator for decades. Well, guess what? They just took Senator Byrd's name off of a public school in Richmond, Virginia. But he was revered within the Democratic Congress, one of the longest-serving congressmen ever in American history. How is it that he could have been revered for so long and suddenly want to strip his name off of a school? Friends, it has to do with attempts to erase history to hide the horror that is coming out more and more about the history of the Democratic Party. And the Democrats today don't want to be, they don't want you to know what that is, even though they are continuing to carry on the nefarious attitudes, dastardly deception to keep black Americans in virtual slavery. So here's what happened. Republicans had tried to pass the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act since the mid-1950s, but Democrats blocked them. That is, until President Johnson, a Democrat, gutted those acts and passed them as part of a scheme to pacify blacks and snare their votes. Notice the word scheme. it was not done with the intention to eradicate the problem. It was done with the intention to impose a different kind of slavery to cause the government to become the master of every black family. That's why they did it. And they were going to do it by snaring their votes. President Roosevelt and Johnson passed public assistance known as the War on Poverty, and then they heavily promoted it among African-American neighborhoods. For many African-American communities, it might be better termed the War on Prosperity rather than the War on Poverty, because that's exactly what happened. The Democratic Party has employed a new generation of house slaves called community organizers, of which Barack Obama was one, to convince African Americans that all of their woes are due to their skin, and to train blacks to beg for government to take care of them, unaware of their new master. Martin Luther King Jr. had a dream of a colorblind society, didn't he? How strange, then, after his death, the two very well-connected Democrats, like Monsieur Jackson and Al Sharpton, profited greatly from fomenting racial tension in the name of Christ. They insist on being called Reverend when their very motivations and direction is to stir up strife, not to bring unity and not to bring resolution. The Democratic Party has an evil and vile history of slavery and racism that continues to this very day. Blind abandonment of symbols, organizations, persons for their association with slavery or the Confederacy is ridiculous. It's counterproductive. It's an effort to erase history to hide its horror, the truth. 150 years later, after slavery, African Americans have been the victims of a public education, community organization, and welfare scheme carefully designed and orchestrated to tie them forever to their new massa government under the Democratic Party. And that's pretty simple to understand, isn't it? Now, you may not like that conclusion. And if you don't like that conclusion and are prone not to agree with it, then let us share the facts. Certainly the facts would help us, wouldn't they? I would hope they would. Now, before we get to those facts concerning the history of the Democratic Party and its nefarious motivations that I have called dastardly deception, because, in fact, it is dastardly. It's wicked. It's wicked to the core. It's designed to keep a group of people in permanent subjection, financially and politically. It is the consummate seduction of a people politically, to keep them forever under the thumb of a political party that has never, ever, ever in its history had their true interests at heart. Ever. It's wicked, it's cruel, it's heinous, it's diabolical, it's abominable, despicable, degenerate. That's my viewpoint. And if, in case you hadn't figured it out yet, that is my viewpoint. And if Jesus were here today, I can guarantee you that he would be saying something quite similar. You see, Jesus got angry, not about things that people did to him, but about what people did to others. And the history of the Democratic Party is so wicked, so oppressive to the African-American people, that it should have been repudiated without ever a word's discussion in the pulpits of black churches. But instead, they've embraced it. Amazing. We'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismier and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings, all at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Today we're talking about something that is so despicable, so egregious in the mind and heart of God and any truth lover, any lover of God and lover of people in the name of Christ should have righteous indignation, just like Jesus would, about the debaucherous and destructive and diabolical nature of what has been done with intentionality to keep an entire people group in subjection while pretending to be their liberators. You talk about deception. Now, before we go further, I want to make available to you a fact sheet that I began to produce in 2005. In 2005, the Holy Spirit spoke to me as a white guy that God was deeply grieved about the condition of black America, the black man in America. The truth had not been told. The truth was not being told by pastors in black churches, because they were under the thumb of the deceptive Democratic Party. They had been seduced to believe that that party was watching over their best interests, when in fact they had every intention otherwise, and to put them into a perpetual slavery. And so God spoke to my heart and he said, son, I want you to become a crusader for black America. I want you to become a voice for those who have no true voice, because their pastors have forfeited their voice to be shills for the Democratic Party that is already set out to deceive them. And so, in 2005, I prepared the first fact sheet called A Portrait of the Black Family. It's been updated. We now have the 2017 edition with the title Descent into Destruction. That term was taken from a black commentary, Dr. Julian Hare, the director of a San Francisco black think tank, and published in Ebony Magazine, written by blacks for blacks, in November 2003 on page 193. He said this. Remember, this was 14 years ago. He said, the black family has crumbled more in the last 30 years than it did in the entire 14 decades since slavery. That was a black man's observation in a black magazine printed and published for black readership. William Raspberry, a very prominent black columnist for a very liberal newspaper called the Washington Post, in 2005, the very year we first did this fact sheet, said this: there is a crisis of unprecedented magnitude in the black community, one that goes to the very heart of its survival. The black family is failing. In this multi-page fact sheet, the likes of which I dare say you have never, ever read or come across, Every single quotation and statistic is taken from black commentaries, except for official government reports, so as to avoid the accusations that some white guy or white people were somehow writing malignant things about the black community. In this fact sheet, we talk about a financial portrait, a leadership portrait, marriage portrait, parenting portrait, abortion portrait, sexual portrait, poverty portrait, prison portrait, religious portrait. And then look at the future of the nation based upon all of this. I want to make it available to you. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org, go to the website, click on fact sheets on the homepage there. It will take you to a list of fact sheets and click on a portrait of the black family. Feel free to print it out. Use it in your Sunday school class. Take it to your pastor. Pass it out in your congregation. Make it a matter of prayer. Friends, the only hope for black America in this hour, and indeed for all America, is for the truth to be known, for repentance to be accomplished based upon that truth, because it is my conviction that black America holds in its hand the only hope for true revival in America. It's a remnant group that claims to be the most Bible-believing group in the country. But the behavior and the statistics reveal something radically different. And much of it flows from the dastardly deception that we're talking about here today. It's all connected. Our website, saveus.org, saveus.org, a portrait of the black family. If you're going to make copies of it, make sure you make copies of the whole thing, including the attestation at the back, and use it as you see fit. All right, let us move forward now. A call to ban the Confederate flag due to its association with slavery, according to one person, is akin to banning the Democratic Party's donkey and Islam's crescent, since both of those institutions were involved in the enslavement of Africans. Yet isn't it interesting that black Americans have gravitated both to the Democratic Party and to Islam like no other group? Yet those two groups are the most responsible groups for slavery in this country and the world. The Democratic Party defended the right to own slaves since the party's founder, Andrew Jackson, owned slaves. Beginning in colonial times, approximately 350,000 African slaves were brought to America, growing to nearly 4 million slaves prior to the Civil War. Slaves were purchased at Muslim slave markets. Islam defended the right to own slaves since its founder, Muhammad, owned slaves. Beginning in 622 AD, the next 1,400 years saw approximately 180 million Africans enslaved in Islamic occupations. Did you hear that? So why, my friends, why, my African-American brothers and sisters, are you so drawn to Islam? Do you not know that it is a consummate enslavement belief system, both religion, legal, and civil, together? It's a composite under Sharia law, and it has imposed horrific slavery in the world. Prior to the Civil War, the United States had two major political parties, Democrats, who favored freedom of choice to own slaves, and Whigs, they called them. On February 28, 1854, in Ripon, Wisconsin, anti-slavery activists met for the first time. They held their first state convention in Jackson, Michigan on July 6, 1854. And this new political party took a stand against slavery, and the name of the party was, guess what? Republican. The new Republican Party was also against efforts in Utah to redefine marriage. Are you beginning to see the theme? The Democratic Party has been trying to redefine marriage, introducing homosexuality, transgenderism. They are the driving force for that, and also the driving force for slavery, or its new diabolical form that we're going to be talking about. The chief plank of the original Republican Party platform was, quote, to prohibit the twin relics of barbarism, polygamy and slavery. Then came the Fugitive Slave Law. It imposed severe penalties on those who aided escaped slaves with food or shelter as they tried to escape. It also made it a crime to interfere with the slave's catcher's recovery of runaway slaves. A person could be held criminally liable, fined $1,000 in those days, and imprisoned for 6 months if they failed to report a neighbor suspected of helping slaves. Well, the Fugitive Slave Law mandate intensified sexual animosity. Remember how we started the program? Our national division, religion, racism, and national division? It's not new. That division was caused by the Democratic Party. The Fugitive Slave Law mandate intensified sexual animosity in the country, provoking the Civil War by requiring citizens who were against slavery to violate their consciences. It was one thing for Northerners to be apathetic toward pro-choice Democrats. Notice again, the same language. Which group of people in the country, morally and politically, are most pro-choice, that is, for abortion, for homosexuality, for transgenderism? It's the Democratic Party, isn't it? They've always been for these things, friends. Why is it that my supposedly God-fearing African-American pastors and brothers and sisters are so gravitated toward them? I'll tell you why. You've been seduced. Totally seduced. And no person is ever seduced against their will. No one. So there's a reason why you've been seduced, why you're willing to be seduced. It was quite another thing for them to be forced by a federal mandate to dip their hands in the blood of the crime and participate in enforcing slavery. Well, along came a fellow by the name of Dred Scott. We're going to talk about Dred Scott. He was a slave who was taken by his master to Illinois and Wisconsin. We're going to talk about that and how that set the stage for the Civil War and the ultimate battle between Republicans and Democrats that exists to this very day. And you didn't see.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and today we're talking about a very serious subject that is determining destiny for 13% of our country, a minority called Black America. It's also determining the destiny of our country as a whole. Because that which affects black America in one generation, it is said affects all America in the next. We're on the cusp of the final division and breakdown of what is known, according to Abraham Lincoln, as the last best hope of Earth. And you and I have a choice. You and I have a choice. Harriet Beecher Stowe, in Uncle Tom's Cabin, gave that choice at the end of her book. And I'm going to quote it here from my book, Renewing the Soul of America, at the end of the program. I hope you'll stay tuned. If you're unable to stay tuned to the whole program, would you go to our website, saveus.org, saveus.org, and you'll be able to listen to it on our website starting tomorrow. It'll be on there for at least a year. It's going to be called Dastardly Deception, the Malignant Manipulation of American Blacks, or Black America. Please, this is very serious. The country's destiny, your destiny, the destiny of our families, our churches. In fact, might I indicate that Jesus Christ is not coming back for a church. Listen, he's not coming back for a church, a bride, with spot, wrinkle, or any such thing. Whether black or white or brown, Republican or Democrat. This program today is not specifically about politics. But it is a political group that has seen fit to carry out this dastardly deception that is destroying an entire people group. And they don't see it. Refuse to see it. And their pastors are so caught up in the power, perks, and position that flow from being recognized from the Democratic Party, they will not tell the truth. Period. Very few will tell the truth. Because they're afraid. They're afraid that even if they do tell the truth, their people will vote with their feet, and they'll lose their congregation, they'll lose their power, perks, and position, and that then what will I do? Mm-hmm. And so some silly white guy God would call to speak the truth, who cares enough to take the heat, the backlash, and to tell the truth with an open heart, to plea a cause that few others are willing to plea. That's what we're doing here today on Viewpoint. A fellow by the name of Dred Scott was a slave. He had been taken by his master to Illinois and Wisconsin, but as he was not allowed to learn to read, he was unaware that those territories forbid slavery. So when he returned to Missouri, Scott sued for freedom with the help of Henry Blow, a Republican congressman whose wife had started the first kindergarten in the United States. Supreme Court Chief Justice Roger Taney, appointed by Democrat President Jackson, rendered the decision that Dred Scott was not a citizen, but only property that belonged to his owner, and wrote that slaves were, quote, so far inferior that the Negro might justly and lawfully be reduced to slavery for his own benefit, unquote. That's the Democratic Party, friend. That's their attitude. Now, they're not going to tell you that openly anymore, because they need your vote. And we're going to come to that. Some states defied the federal government's fugitive slave law mandate by passing personal liberty laws that effectively nullified it. Other communities forbade local law enforcement officials from using their jails to hold the accused. President Lincoln, as you know, issued the Emancipation Proclamation under questionable constitutional authority. So the issues were settled by the passing of the 13th Amendment that officially ended slavery, that is, legally. Now, I want you to listen to this. Who voted for the 13th Amendment? Every Republican in the House of Representatives, and in the Senate voted for it, joined by a few Democrats in the Senate, only four Democrats in the Senate and only 15 in the House. In other words, the Emancipation Proclamation was passed by Republicans and resisted to the max by Democrats. Are you listening? Now, as we've already indicated, the Republican platform in 1856 was to prohibit the twin relics of barbarism, polygamy, and slavery. So, Republican President Abraham Lincoln signed the Anti-Bigamy Polygamy Act of 1862. Those attempting to redefine marriage, that is, the Democratic Party, were denounced by Republican President Ulysses S. Grant on December 4, 1871. You see the pattern. Tearing down marriage and destroying a people group called Black America. They weren't worthy. That attitude is considered to this very day. It's dastardly. It's dangerous. It's deceptive. Heinous. Any term that you can possibly come up with. Now, the Democratic Party identified itself as the, quote, white man's party, and demonized the Republican Party as being, quote, Negro-dominated, unquote, even though whites were in control. By 1877, when Reconstruction was officially over, the Democratic Party controlled every southern state. Why? Why? To perpetuate slavery. They weren't interested in getting rid of slavery. They wanted to perpetuate it. Their hearts were malignant. Malignant toward God and malignant toward Black America. By 1864, our country had grown weary of the long and bloody Civil War. Hundreds of thousands of the country's best and bravest young men had fallen on the fields of Bull Run, Antietam, Shiloh, and countless more. Many began to think that the war was not worth it, and the price of freedom was too great. So the Republican presidential candidate, Abraham Lincoln, thought no price was too great for the abolition of slavery. Unfortunately, Lincoln's support was dropping fast, and people were looking for a way out of the war. With that backdrop, the Democratic Party in 1864 chose General George McClellan to be their presidential candidate at the Chicago National Convention. The Democratic Party platform presented a plan of what they called compromise with the South, which became known as the Chicago Platform. Friends, isn't that the place where Jesse Jackson makes his home? And I think also Mr. Sharpton. And isn't that the place also where Barack Obama made his home? Yes. The heinous power of the Democratic Party. The Chicago platform continues to exist, friends, in spirit. They said that the purpose of the Chicago platform was to bring about immediate cessation of hostilities, to provide a compromise. But what they didn't say in words was clearly implied, and that was that the compromise would be to agree to make permanent the institution of slavery in exchange for an end to the Civil War and restoration of the Union. In other words, barter the Union for blacks in America to keep them in slavery. In other words, the Democratic Party was willing to sell out the enslaved in order to stop further loss of white lives. You're finally hearing the truth, friends. If reestablishment of the Union was the only condition that was indispensable, then clearly the issue of abolition of slavery was dispensable to them. and the possibility of slavery being permanently institutionalized was on the negotiation table. So what happened? A fellow by the name of Thomas Nast exposed the hypocrisy of the Democratic platform with a stunning illustration. He became famous as a result of his cartoon. As a result of that, the Nast illustration, entitled The Chicago Platform, was published on October 15, 1864, just before the 1864 presidential election. It was printed in Harper's Weekly, the most popular illustrated newspaper of that day. It was read by approximately 1.2 million people every week. At the point this illustration was published, very few thought that Abraham Lincoln had much of a chance of winning a second term as president. Very much like the possibility of Donald Trump winning in the last election. The promise of the Democratic Party to end the war was seemingly carrying the day. The seductive message had begun to gain traction, and our country was on the verge of accepting slavery as a permanent and protected national institution. The Thomas Nast illustration of the Chicago platform of the Democratic Party helped to raise the righteous indignation of the nation. It showed that if we gave up before we won, all had died in vain. Now, can you understand Abraham Lincoln's words? Shall these dead have died in vain? With the help of Thomas Nast, a cartoonist, and his powerful illustration, Abraham Lincoln did win the 1864 election. The Union was restored, slavery was abolished once and for all, at least legally, and the nation was put on a new path of freedom and justice for all. Except that the underlying attitude of slavery persists to this very day in the Democratic Party. It was at the very heart of President Johnson's so-called War on Poverty and the Civil Rights Act. Did you know that when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 came up for a vote, it was Republicans that drove that bill, not Democrats? Democrats resisted that bill. They have always resisted and wanted to keep black America in slavery. So what did they do? They decided through Lyndon Baines Johnson, and this is what is so utterly sinister and diabolical about this. They decided to exchange their bias through slavery to a kind of bribery. And so they came up with a bill that would provide money to forever seduce black America under the aegis of the government being their god, to submit, to vote in perpetuity for the party that historically has wanted to destroy them. Are you listening? Are you listening with your heart? Some of us have some very serious choices to make, not about political parties, but about our hearts. Who in the world do we trust anyway? Thanks for joining us. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.